I'm speaking today with State Representative Carol Alvarado of the 145th House District here in Houston. Representative, thank you for talking to me today. You have now served three terms mm-hmm. in the Texas House, which is as many terms as you served on Houston City Council. Mm-hmm. So when you look back on your time in the House, and you know, what do you feel you've done so far? What are you proud of so far?
Well, several things, and thank you for your time, Charles. I think I've tried to move the ball a little further when it comes to preventive measures on health issues that impact our community, whether it's diabetes, it's obesity, it's smoking, more funding for education. Those are the real heart issues, I think, that impact not only the Latino community, but all of us in Harris County and in Texas. I currently co-chair a committee that is investigating a UT Board of Regents, and so that's gotten a lot of attention, and certainly I think there's some underlying tones there in what some of the leadership in this state is trying to do to our higher education system. And so I think as we move a little forward in this investigation, I think some of that's going to come to fruition, and we'll be able to have a different conversation about higher education.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, I confess I haven't really followed that. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about, the investigation of the chair of the Board of Regents at UT, Wallace Hall,
yes,
his name is.
Yes, he's a Board of Regent, and he is supported by a very far right-leaning conservative group called Empower Texas, which is led by Michael Quinn Sullivan. They're big supporters of Governor Perry, and it's very clear where their position and Governor Perry's position is on this investigation. And they've gone even at the length of doing a mailer in my district, which is kind of unusual.
I actually received one of those.
Oh, you did? Okay. Which is unusual, because usually they tend to focus on Republican seats. And so now I've got this far right-leaning organization that is gotten into my politics in my district.
So. And you know, for folks like me who haven't sort of scanned the headlines but haven't really followed this particular story very closely, give me like a $1.98 overview. What exactly is going on here? What is being investigated? What's going on with that?
Abuse of power. And I think what we have to determine is it something that's impeachable? And you had an individual that made just outrageous, enormous requests of information, an open records request, to the tune of about 800,000 pages of paper. So you take just that, and then you combine the staff hours and resources that have drained the university, and what that's cost, and what it's costing taxpayers to do this investigation. And I think there's an underlying. There was an effort here to impact higher education in Texas.
In what way?
Well, that's all I'll say for now, because I want to make sure we get through the investigation and I can still be objective in the decisions that we make.
Okay. All right. Well, let's look back on the last session. You talk about health issues. Obviously, the last session was sort of defined, if you will, by Senator Davis's filibuster on abortion. That legislation passed. It's in the courts, but so far they have not blocked it. Mm-hmm. Do you get the feeling that we've seen the last of this, or do you think they're going to come back with more? What do you think is going to happen next session?
I think you're going to see more of that coming out of the Senate. I think the Senate's going to be...
Where do they go from here?
you know, it's funny, because usually the Senate is the place of reason where compromise is struck, and the House, because of the different dynamics, is usually a more volatile place. And I think you're going to see the opposite this time. I think if you look at just what could be, whether it's the lieutenant governor's race or some of the vacancies in the Senate being filled, I think the House is going to be more of a place of calmness, compromise under the leadership of our speaker.
What do you think the Republicans are going to try to do with reproductive health or contraception, whatever, next session?
I think you'll see more of that coming out of the Senate, more on that
what
side.
What specifically do you think they're going to target,
You might have, you know, just more ways to strip women from making their own decisions over their body and limiting their choice. I haven't heard of anything specific yet, but it just we're anticipating it, and we'll be ready. I've been through this now 3 sessions. My first session is when we had the sonogram bill, and when I stood on the House floor and demonstrated exactly what the sonogram bill would do. And so now my former colleague, looks like he's going to be, who authored the bill, Sid Miller, who's going to be a statewide elected official.
A candidate, at least.
Yeah.
So, all right. Public education. Mm-hmm. As you know, over $5 billion cut 2 sessions ago, about $3.5 billion restored in the last session. The litigation is all set as we're talking today to be heard again. I don't think they're going to, I mean, they're not going to do a full rehash, but they're going to evaluate the impact of the past session on the previous ruling that basically said that our system was all messed up and needed to be redone. What do you anticipate happening in 2015 with school finance? And what are you going to fight for?
Still try to get some of that funding recouped. We managed to get a little of that recouped, close to $4 billion recouped. And then we did account for future growth, future enrollment, which, you know, last session was, I think, the first session that legislature didn't account for that. So I think we've got to play catch up, first of all, try to recoup last 2 sessions. And then look at the impact of teacher layoffs, other staff layoffs, the overcrowding of the classrooms, and the impact that had, the academic impact. And so I would imagine that those that will be sitting on the education committee, that's going to be one of the first things they're looking at, if not during the interim.
Do you, as you know, the other thing related to education last time was major changes to standardized testing and graduation requirements. Those are all still kind of controversial, and I don't think anyone really knows yet what's going to happen, how it's going to play out. I suspect that, you know, we're going to continue to see changes and tweaks and whatnot. Where do you see that going next session? What do you want to see, and what do you think you'll see?
Hopefully, the new testing system will prove to be effective. I've heard both sides of it. I go out and visit. I try to get to every elementary, middle school, and junior, and high school in my district. So I've heard good and bad. Some kids feel like it was too hard. Some felt that it made them study a little bit more, and so they were more disciplined. Haven't heard so much from teachers yet, but more from the students and parents. So I think we're on the right path with that. One other thing that we did was HB5, and that allowed for some flexibility in the curriculum. So I'm excited about that, because what I've been able to do is to bring some of the service companies that are working out in the Permian Basin and Eagleford area together with Dr. Greer's team, and try to identify those shortages that those companies are having in filling jobs. They have expressed concern over many levels of blue-collar positions that they cannot fill, the lack of training, the lack of skills. And so, for example, HISD is taking their comments and their input and trying to figure out how to create a program that brings together some vocational, technical, IT training to suit those vacancies that are not just here for today, tomorrow, and the next couple of years, but the next 5 or 10 years. And I'm a big proponent of that, because we have to realize that not every kid's going to go to a 4-year university. And I think we have to have alternatives for them with good paying jobs, and getting them trained and skilled in some sort of trade. So I'm excited about that. We'll see how that goes.
Okay. You know, we've now had one election conducted under the voter ID legislation that was passed, and that was allowed to be implemented. with the court striking down Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. A lot of the Republicans, especially the Secretary of State, or the outgoing Secretary, former Secretary of State now, were saying, oh, it went great, no problems, no one was denied the vote, blah, blah, blah. It's not what you hear from some people on the ground. What's your view of how that went? And, you know, do you see any prospect for revisiting that and maybe making it somewhat less onerous?
Well, it didn't just impact communities of color. I mean, I heard stories about older Anglo women that didn't have a driver's license because they don't drive anymore. And so the hassle to go and get an ID was much more cumbersome than just going and getting your driver's license renewed. So I'm hoping that people are documenting every time that they hear one of these cases, and that we can use that in the courts and show that it was a law, it was a solution in search of a problem, and that it's disenfranchising our communities across the board.
Okay. To start this interview, I talked about you serving 3 terms on Houston City Council. City of Houston nowadays seems to have a pretty good relationship with Harris County. Didn't always, but it's doing pretty well right now. But it always seems to have somewhat of a contentious relationship with the state. Laws that get passed that affect cities and sometimes get targeted at Houston. Mayor Parker's been trying to get someone to carry a bill for it, or to regulate, to give more control over pensions for particularly the firefighters. Hasn't had anyone do that. How do you view the relationship between the City of Houston and the legislature, and what are you doing about it?
Well, I hope I've tried to be that bridge that tries to build a healthier relationship. Obviously, coming off of City Council and serving as president for the Texas Municipal League, I understand the boundaries, and I respect that the mayor and the council, City of Houston operates under a home rule city. So I'm very cautious about that. I'm the vice chair of the Urban Affairs Committee, which is where most of the city's issues come through. And they have a nickname for it. They basically call it the Houston City Council Committee. But I respect those boundaries, and I try to work within them. When you had issues like the red light cameras, I thought that was something that the state should not meddle in. And we've had those kind of bills come up, and I oppose those because I think that's the jurisdiction over that the city has over what they think is best when it comes to public safety. I don't see it now outside of the pension issue. There haven't really been too many issues that have caused a strain in the relationship. You have some, on the Republican side, they don't want to pass any bills that help cities generate revenue. And I thought there was some good bills last session that the city had that would actually help. But so I think it's getting better. Okay. As long as you don't talk about the pension issues.
Yes. Well, the cities, it seems like, have been taking the lead and going a distinctly different direction than the state on a number of issues lately. You've got payday lending, wage theft, non-discrimination ordinances, and the city's recent edict that, under the terms of the Charter Amendment passed in 2001, legally married couples include same-sex couples for the purpose of health benefits for city employees. Do you think stuff like that influences the legislature to act one way or the other, or does the legislature not pay much attention to what cities are doing with their own business like that unless someone, brings it to their attention? Do the cities affect the legislature like that?
Yeah. I mean, you saw that
with payday lending.
And several sessions ago with red light cameras,
yeah.
The more that cities adopted ordinances than the state ramped up their efforts to try to outlaw that. I think it does have an impact. How far it will go, I don't know, because I really think that we're going to see more coming out of the Senate on these social wedge issues that they're gonna push because they can and because they've got the votes. And you have a different different dynamic in the Senate. So
Do you see any prospect for the state passing a payday lending law similar to what cities like Houston and San Antonio have passed? The bills have come up, but they've not gone anywhere. And do you support such efforts?
I recognize that payday lending, the industry fills a niche. They cater to a group of people that are many times, stories I've heard, they're in dire straits. It's a emergency. It's a last-minute lending process that they go through. Can there be some tightening up in the industry so that people aren't taken advantage of? Sure. So I think, it has to be done within reason, and I don't see that issue getting overhauled in the legislature. You might have some tweaking, dealing with, fees and interest rates and stuff like that, and hopefully that's the discussion that you've got the consumer groups sitting at the table with the industry.
Okay. At this time last year, you were running for the state Senate against now Senator Sylvia Garcia. Mm-hmm. More recently, in the city election, there was a candidate that she supported who won over a candidate that you supported. And people talking about a rivalry between the two of you. What's your relationship with Senator Garcia like?
Well, we have worked together on a few issues, and occasionally we support the same candidates, but... my focus is representing my district and trying to be effective in the legislature. And it means being able to get along with everybody, get along with people in your delegation, get along with people on the other side of the aisle, try to get along with the leadership in the state, which is very difficult many times. But I think people make more of this rivalry than what it is.
All right. Talk about the leadership. A lot of people are leaving office or running for different offices at the state level, but the one person who is staying put is the Texas House Speaker, yeah. Joe Strauss. Now, for as long as he's been serving, there's been people who've been trying to unseat him. Mm-hmm. What's your view of the job that Speaker Strauss has done?
I think he's done a fairly good job. He's even-handed. He lets chairs of the committee run their committee as they see fit. I'm proof of that. I co-chair a committee that's under the spotlight, and he's never tried to be heavy-handed or direct chairs to do one thing or another. And I think he's done a fairly good job of trying to keep some of the issues that tend to be most divisive and partisan out, to the best of his ability. And I think he's been fair. He has put Democrats in leadership position, which most of us are grateful for. And he recognizes that he cannot govern with just one side of the aisle, that he needs Democrats as well.
Okay. A lot of legislation in Austin is not big, high-profile social stuff, but nuts and bolts stuff that affect individual districts and whatnot. And what issues that affect District 145 do you think you're going to be trying to get something done on in the legislature next session?
Well, as we mentioned before, education, again, trying to restore those cuts. What I did during the last interim, I went to pretty much every school in the district and took as many notes as I could about the impact of the oversized classrooms. And I had legislation, and I hope to move it a little further this time. Unfortunately, Senator Patrick being chair of the committee, I couldn't get a hearing, but I was trying to do something about classroom size, just something very simple, reporting. Because when classrooms ask for a waiver to go over the 22-to-1 ratio, they're given that waiver or they're not. But there's no records of how many students are actually in that classroom. So that's something I tried to work on, and Senator Patrick said he didn't support that, but said next session, let's work on something that deals with oversized classrooms. And I don't know what he has in mind, but
he won't be senator anymore, though.
Yeah. So I think trying to pick that back up and really focus on the impact, the oversizing of the classrooms, mm-hmm. the shortage of the teachers, and then continuing what I've been doing, which is trying to reduce obesity in our state. It's a big problem. I've managed to do a couple of things in the community to offset some of that, but when you're dealing with an issue like that, it takes everybody. It's the parents, it's the schools, it's the community at large. And so we've been hosting the last couple of years a Diabetes Awareness Day, where we open up a place in the neighborhood. We get physicians from the medical center that was with Methodist Hospital to come in and screen people. And we had almost 200 people come in, and a good majority of those were diagnosed with some form of diabetes. Many of them didn't know it. They were able to get their eyes checked, their blood pressure, their cholesterol, their feet examined, and they got to sit with a nutritionist and talk about eating healthy. And those are things that cost. And even if you have insurance, many times insurance isn't going to pay for you to go see a nutritionist. So tackling things like that, we got our bill passed in the House and the Senate, eliminating the sugary drinks from the schools. And getting a bill like that passed in a Republican, conservative-controlled House and Senate is not easy. And it was vetoed by the governor. So continuing to push some of those issues, continuing to deal with workforce, we passed a handful of bills that took effect in September that bridges the relationship between our community colleges and some of our workforce needs, and back to what I was talking about earlier with the looking at the curriculum and how do you fit more mm-hmm. vocational technical training into the schools and matching what the needs are for our labor workforce that's driving the economy in Texas.
Okay. Obviously, the marquee event this year is going to be the governor's race, mm-hmm. Senator Wendy Davis, and, equally important, the lieutenant governor race, Senator Van de Poot. I'm asking all the Democrats I'm talking to, what are you doing now and what will you be doing this year to help get those two ladies and everyone else running mm-hmm. statewide elected?
Well, Senator Davis has a pretty good team. They've been very proactive in reaching out to all the House members, and they have given us some assignments that we've carried out. A lot of it done electronically. There was one Saturday, I guess it was the Saturday before the cutoff for fundraising, or I forget what the deadline was, but all the House members sent the same message out to our contributors, to our supporters. And when she comes into town, they've been very welcoming of our participation. They've let us have access to what her appearances are going to be and invite us to join in at any time. So they want us to really work our districts and to build up the base and to increase turnout.
Okay. And you do have an opponent this mm-hmm. March in the Democratic primary. Why should people vote for you to send you back for a fourth term to the House and not vote for your opponent?
Well, hopefully they've taken note of what we've been doing the last couple of sessions and getting some bills passed. Again, it's not easy when you're in the minority, but being able to go to Austin and to be effective, to be taken seriously, to be at the table when important decisions are made, getting good committee assignments are very important on how your bills move or not. Balancing that with what we do in the neighborhood by being very involved with our schools, getting to know the principals and the teachers, and being active with them throughout the year, being active with our senior centers and our community organizations, our civic clubs, our ministers. This coming month, we will start our Run with the Rep again, and we do that once a month, and we utilize it's a couple of things. One is to call attention to the beautiful green space and the amenities that our city has. And then getting people to come out. They can come out and run or walk with me. And when you do things like that, it's a group effort and people are more likely to come out and do physical activity as opposed to doing it by themselves. So continue to do that. And I think we've been very good about keeping people informed about our legislative activities. And we've done credit counseling workshops and state of the district where we give a very in-depth summary of what took place in the session. And, you know, people are very grateful for that because they read the paper, they watch the news, they get snippets of what actually took place. But if you break it down and you talk to them about the budget, where our revenues come from, where we spend money, what cuts have taken place and what consequences follow those cuts. So hopefully people take note about the experience that I have, the involvement in the community, not just around campaign time, but throughout the year. And I think we've been very responsive on constituent services. And so hopefully people recognize that and want to continue.
All right. Representative Carol Alvarado, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.